Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on the Tour of Coach podcast, where we bring you the best mental coaches, fitness experts, teachers, players, everything from my journey in the game of golf to help you learn to play better golf, teach better golf, and enjoy the game. Come on in. We're going to have some fun. Hi, joining me here on the Tour Coach, kind of an emergency edition where we had a rally the troops, get everybody together, get my good friend, top 100 instructor, Wayne Flint, Jackson K Golf, Jackson Court, who sits in with me all the time from over at Atlantic Beach. And Jackson was up with me this past week up in Nashville at the Korn Ferry event, doing a great job with his guys. And, I was sitting there and I've been looking at stuff on social media. And I see, Wayno, I'm going to pitch this to you first because there's nobody better to pitch it to first. And then Jackson can kind of clean up the dust. But, like, I think that there's this rash of people. It's been going on, obviously. But it seems like there's, you know, these fads that come along where teachers and people try to put something out there that they say is going to be dramatically different in order just to get them noticed or just to, you know, whatever. Right. And then they go and they attack other people's ways of doing things. What do you think of all these teaching fads? How much has your instruction changed over the years? And I personally think that these fads and the social media stuff I don't think that's actually helping golfers.
Yeah, Tony, I don't know.
You like that, Jackson.
You know, you see a lot of stuff, don't you? And, mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, social media, we're getting more than we've ever, you know, been able to say grace over, to be honest with you. But and there's nothing wrong with people trying to get noticed and become validated. And, you know, I've always, my whole career, all I've ever tried to do is just keep making the person in front of me better and better and better and let their successes bring me whatever validation that I can get from, you know, from local media or my peers or, you know, the respect that you get if you make a lot of people better. I've just kind of let that try to do the talking for me instead of a lot of stuff. And I know that's old school. And, you know, I try to do some stuff online where I put swings out there and things like that to kind of congratulate students, really so much for me, but congratulate students that have worked hard and maybe won a little junior tournament or, you know, done well in some regional qualifier or whatever the case may be, you know, kind of really recognize them more than try to bring attention to myself. You know, the fads that come and go, I mean, I don't know that they're solid or they would never go away. They would never come. If they did come and they were great, they'd never leave, right? Yeah. So you'd never be bouncing from one thing to another. And, you know, you and I've talked a lot. I've always been of the opinion if person comes to you and, you know, their main thing is they're twisting the club all around them and the club shaft is never on plane and the club face is never square to anything, you know, maybe just dig into the one or two things that are really, really bad and try to fix those, you know, and, you know, I'm not one of these guys that tries to do something radical. If we're going to try to learn something, let's just try to learn to do it right. I mean, learning's learning. And, you know, why try to learn something that's unconventional to get closer to maybe where you want to be? I always just say, here's what I think's important and here's where I want you to be. And let's work real hard and let's figure out how to get there. You know, the quickest way possible. Now, I do think what has changed for me over the years has been, you know, continuing to go out and learn more about what I'm doing, not try to recreate it and change it so much, but get more knowledgeable where I can explain it maybe more simply. And then also go learn more, like, you know, you and I've talked a lot and man, I wish it would have happened, you know, 25 years ago. You know, we started with HJ and it was great. And they were on the front edge of all the, how the body works and all that with the old ASMI, Alabama Sports Medicine Institute. And, you know, we were learning a lot back then, but, you know, now you've jumped in and we've all been fortunate enough to kind of ride your coattails and get involved with K Wayne. And, That's just been so enlightening to me. Bringing another tool to the toolbox, so everybody says. Just bringing another way to try to get people to learn motor patterns and do it better and do it faster and more efficiently. So, that's what I've tried to focus on, is trying to learn as much as I can from my peers to make my knowledge better, and then try to learn it as many different ways of doing it so I could get my students where I want them to be faster.
Jackson, what about you? Talk a little bit about the stuff you're seeing out there. You obviously little younger than us, right? You've done a nice job building your business, helping young players, whether they're junior golfers or recreational golfers or young players trying to play for a living. What are your words of advice for people? What are you seeing out there? What are your words of advice for golfers that are trying to find information and get better?
First, T, there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
There's different ways to maybe describe it, but yeah, there's nothing new under the sun. And I think to play the devil's advocate a little bit, can I do that first?
Yeah, for sure you can.
I do give them people credit who are able to shout from the mountaintops and gain an audience on social media. Like, kudos. That's maybe not my cup of tea or Wayno's cup of tea, but building an audience and keeping an audience is pretty darn good. If the people listening are trying to get better, I would watch golf swings or whatever people are putting out content and make sure golf swings are different, right? Like, not everybody's swinging it the same or doing it the same. Like, that one size fits all model, I don't think ever really works. And you can see fads or trends in people's instruction just through Instagram or whatever,
Oh,
TikTok,
for
all this,
sure.
where they might be on the same rhetoric for like a year and you see a bunch of the same things and then it kind of drifts. Like, I think now that social media has been out and I've been coaching golf for over a decade, like, I can think of several instructors that are kind of on one thing for a while and then all of a sudden their videos change for the next 2 years, and it's just kind of cyclical like that. And I'm not saying I don't have preferences either,
Oh, for sure, we
but
all do.
we all do. But yeah, those are the first couple things I would advise people to look at, is make sure the swings and info that people are putting out there is probably different or would create swings that aren't the same. And then yeah, pay attention to the cycles in which content and information is being put out from those instructors.
I had dinner 2 nights ago with Kevin Kirk, good friend of ours, all of ours, and great, great teacher, one of the best in the world. And Kevin did a speech. I'm gonna have him on, he'll tell the story, but he did a speech to one of the sections, PGA sections, and he started it out where he read this sentence, if you will, that was about the club swinging around a circle with a steady head, this, that, and the other, all the stuff, and said, when do you think this was written? And everybody raised their hand, and it was the first words ever written about golf, like in 1300 something, right? And it was pretty wild, and that's kind of one of the things that prompted me to have this, is I think we do a lot of mentoring of young coaches and teachers, obviously through the Golf Coach Development Group. And, I try to encourage teachers to like go figure out what you believe, write down what you believe, and then get good at making people better. Right. And, I get more disappointed in teachers. There's one in particular that I thought was a pretty good teacher and had a chance to be really good, but I think he's gotten off in trying to chase things to become famous or to have things right, and jumping from what you're working on to what you're working on to something else to something else, right? And I think that's just those are the ones that are disappointing to me. And I think that one of the things that I think is most important for people out there is to watch the people that are actually making people better, right? Like, I mean, if a guy has ruined six tour players, why would you, and you're a tour player, why would you want to watch him, right? If the guy's never made a, doesn't have anybody in your hometown and nobody's ever won a club championship or a member guest, why the hell would you want to go to him, regardless of what his social media is, right? You know, if the guy's only been teaching a year and a half and he's throwing out some cool shit with a bunch of graphics, but he's only been teaching a year and a half and never made anybody good, why would you want to go take a lesson from him, right? You know, that's just, those are my random thoughts. Am I far off, Jackson?
A lot of money for not a little experience. I mean, I for sure will go down trends of chasing stuff. I think over the last couple of years, it's probably gotten less and less as I continue to fall back to my foundation. Obviously, my foundation is going to be built on what you and Wayne have hammered home for me for a couple of years. It starts with putting a tent up every day, Connor. But I think if you've got your seven things that you can do repeatedly. Yeah, it was actually kind of like what I asked you in the in Nashville. Like, actually, can I ask a question kind of along the same lines but a little different? Like, I feel like when I get with average Joes, it's pretty easy to kind of not stick to the same rhetoric, but be able to have several lessons and different ways of doing that help them. But the better the player, I think it's kind of in there, but it's almost a little bit more student-led based on like what they feel under pressure. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
What, that it's different with between the recreational golfer and the really good player, tour player?
Yeah, not that it's different, but I think it gets a like. I think when I've had good work with tour players or better players and professional golfers, it's like I try to keep them in the bubbles, but I let them run a little bit more with it. But is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think that's good. I think that's the way. As long as you're, I'll let Wayne, will have some great insight into this. I think as long as you control the lesson and you're speaking of Connor, I mean, I think is if you've got to have control over the lesson, right? Like over the student. But I think that with like tour players and better players, but I think with all students, you've got to listen to them, right? But I think, like with tour players, to me, I know that there's teachers that are, I wouldn't say not afraid, but like aren't afraid to jump in there and do something crazy and drastic. I'm not really one of those guys. I'm more going to look at what they've done when they've played their best and probably help and look at what they're doing now and what's not working and try to help them gravitate back to what they do rather than be one of those persons that would like to go in and put my own shit in there so everybody knows that I helped them. Right.
Speaking of fads.
Speaking of fads, right? So, like, I think that, but I think that, like, I think the difference to me is when you have a 10, 15 handicapper that comes to you at Atlantic Beach, the odds that they're playing in anything or their schedule wise, where like you can't go jump in and do what you want to do, like, golf wise, isn't that big a deal. Whereas I think if a tour player comes to me, Wayne, or you, we have to like think, well, I mean, they gotta tee it up next Thursday and it's a playoff event and maybe they gotta play good. So what can I put in that's gonna give them the best chance? And I think that that's often different than where we would start with
Okay.
a 15 handicapper. And I don't know if that even remotely answered your question.
No, the end was kind of a light bulb for me.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you know, and I think that you get, and this is where I'd love Wayne to comment, is where I think you get better at having the ability to help tour players. This is why I'm not a big fan of the people that just get into teaching thinking they can teach tour players, right? But anyways, they, because I think you learn the way and the things that work and that'll help tour players and how to time it by all the lessons you do with 10s and 15 handicappers, and you see how things react, and you see, or whether they're high school kids or whatever. So I think that all of the stuff you do with those 10 and 15 and 20 handicappers, like, I don't think, I know Wayne, you've got that story about Davis Love Jr. and, you know, the ways to become a good teacher. One of them is to teach a lot of lessons. And I don't think you can replicate teaching a whole bunch of people to help you figure out what's the right time and the best way to help a tour player without having taught a bunch of people, regardless of, you know, whether they're playing for a living. Bueno?
Well, we've for sure talked about a lot of, or you guys have talked about a lot of stuff the last 10 minutes or so. So, you know, kind of what I think about all of it that's been said is I think the young people that are trying to learn how to teach, I think part of the reason our group has some success, not that we're mega smart or way ahead of everybody else or anything like that, but we talk to each other all the time and we bounce stuff off of each other all the time and we ask each other for help all the time. And, you know, you and I, being a little bit older, we've taught more lessons than Jackson and Connor, you know, so we've been in the, you know, on the tee a lot longer. So I think when tour players or whatever come to us, or just regular golfers come to us, I think we're a little bit more prepared to control that lesson. I think we've done it enough. We kind of know where we're trying to go. We look at the one or two things we really want to do. We tell the person, we convey that to them, and we tell them why, right? So that they're not just, well, I'm trying this for nothing. We tell them why we're going to try this because this is what we want to make happen. And excuse me, this is what we want to change. And, you know, a couple bad shots here or there, we don't freak out and go try to fix the ball, right? We try to fix the problem and let the problem get fixed, fix the ball. Now, I'm not saying we don't do a little ball flight teaching from time to time to try to make our students have some fun, but we're secure in our knowledge enough and in our delivery enough that we know if we get them to do what we're trying to get them to do, we know it's going to work. And you know, when you get with tour players, they're able to do it quicker because they're better, right? They're able to, maybe they hit a couple thin shots in a row. Well, they can figure it out on the third shot how to not hit it thin, right? They can get to good ball striking and solid contact a lot quicker than maybe a 26 handicapper can. You know, they may just fly right off the rails at a 26, and you know, take them a little while to get them back in business, so to speak. So I think what happens to a lot of younger teachers when something doesn't go well in the first two or three shots, they kind of freak out thinking they're going to lose the student because they hadn't made them better. Well, it's only been three shots. I mean, you know, you can't lose your mind over three bad shots in a row. I mean, golf's hard, right? So
Yeah. And I think that's a good lesson for the student that's listening to this as well.
absolutely. And
You
you know,
got to
and
take somebody that's had success you trust so you can hang in there and learn to do it.
I think, you know, my advice to young teachers, I think one of the best things of advice is just what you said earlier. You know, sit down one day, one Sunday afternoon, you know, and when you're home alone, and you know, sit there and write down a list of things that you really believe are really super important in teaching golf. Maybe you have three things, maybe you have five things. I think there's seven things that are important. And you know, I compiled those just watching all the great teachers that I was lucky enough to be around when I was younger. And you know, I came to a small list of things that I felt were important. And you know, I think every young teacher should do that because I think it makes them think. It makes them
Way
think about
harder than you think.
it makes them think how things work and how things don't work, how what you got to bring to the table to get things to start working together. And having said that, that list can always change. I mean, I think you continue to learn, and I think you continue to refine whatever you think you want to deliver. I think that's the goal, or should be the goal of all young teachers, to be around enough great teachers or people that would be called greater teachers, probably because of more experience, maybe a little more success, so on and so forth. But to get around enough of those better teachers who've done it longer, or maybe just brilliant young teachers who are smart, right? And learn as much as you can from those people and continue to evolve whatever package or whatever thing you want to deliver to your students, and continue to try to make that as good and as seamless and as well thought out as you can. So you should always be evolving a little bit, but I think to become a great teacher, I think you have to sit down and have a base starting point that this is what I believe, and this is how I'm going to go about it. And I think the quest to do that well never ends. You and I talk all the time, and I told you the other day, hey man, I gotta have a 5 minute conversation with you here in the next few days, because I got a couple things I want to run by you, you know. And I think, you know, hell, I'm the old guy in the bunch, but I look to you and Jackson, and I look for advice on things. And, you know, I appreciate being involved with you guys, and love being involved with you guys, because we have a whole bunch of fun teaching golf. But I think we can all learn from each other, old, young, whatever.
No question. Connor, you got any last questions? This has been a doozy. It's been a good one.
He just called me Connor.
Oh, sorry.
Same thing.
So I will say, I think after Wayne was talking about that, T, one of the guys that you were working with in Nashville that I got the honor of watching with, he brought up in the past how he was on tour and coach maybe wanted to change something. And like, I think you could even call like making a change just to make a change a fad, where like the guy that was in his corner on his team said, F that, just make another putt, right? Like, right. Hit it in the fairway, make one more putt, don't make a double in the tournament, right? And learn how to play golf a little more. So I think those, you for sure probably, I don't know if you guys would agree or disagree, you've probably seen more fads with all the social media stuff, but
let's go through some, right? Like, I think that and their effect on recreational and golfers, like I would start with the one you touched on. Like, I think the fad where all anybody does is try to get the speed number up and create speed, right? Yeah. And speed training and all that. I think it hurts as many golfers as it helps. Okay. HJ used to have a saying that, you know what, the best way to hit it further is to hit it in solid, right? You want to know what the best way to hit it further is? Hit it in the center. So, like, you know, I think that it's easy on social media to just post that, but you don't know if the person hit it 20 yards into the woods or whatever. And understand, I think that's where a coach understands. Like, if we get a player that comes to us and says, man, I just really need to hit it further. Like, you have to be able to look at him and say, like, one, how much further can you get it? And what will they give up? And if this guy hits it, this 20 handicapper hits it 18 yards or 11 yards further, is that going to significantly make him a better player? Right. Now, there are some, I mean, there's been some tour players, and there's been some players that, you know, I know we've helped by doing some things where they've picked up some distance. And there are probably some people where you say, hey, I mean, to do what this guy's trying to do or this girl's trying to do, they do need to hit it further. I mean, I had a college girl once that definitely to play at the level she wanted, she would need to hit it further. But, like, I think that's one fad that I think as teachers we have to be able to address. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to make you faster, but is faster what's going to really make you play better? Student doesn't always know.
Well, I think, you know, I don't think speed's ever going to go away, but I don't think the way to big distance is just through how fast you swing the golf club. I think, you know, that's all got to get matched up using your body and your arms. And, you know, there's got to be everything working together as a team, so to speak. You just can't swing the club 500 miles an hour and hit it all over the face of the club and expect to be great. So, you know, a lot of time, you know, my students probably get sick and tired of hearing me say, come on, slow down a little bit, because I'm slow down just a touch and hit it in the middle of the face one time for me, you know, and then let's build off of that. Let's see if we can't hit it solid first, and then let's build off of solid contact, you know. So there's all kinds of ways to get to the end of the line, but, you know, just saying that every single person that walks up has to get their ball speed up 3 miles an hour, the club head speed up, or whatever, just shooting for a certain number on a machine. I don't think that's the way to get better at golf at all. I really don't. And those machines are great, and they give us a lot of information. I
Yeah, no,
don't
I love them.
want
I use
everyone
them.
mad
Blue
at
hell,
me about that.
they're a sponsor of this show.
Right.
Bushnell, right? I
I
mean,
mean, I
of
think they're
course.
great. I've got that. We've all got that stuff to use, but that's not going to tell you how to hit it better. It's just going to tell you what just happened.
Jackson, what you thinking? Come up with it. Give us another
I've been thinking about this a lot.
Oh boy.
Is the Obviously, your guys' note card from back in the day when I first started working for you guys. But pretty much every lesson now, at some point, probably 30, 45 minutes in, I sit there and I ask myself several times, not just once, what is the lesson? Like, what is the his lesson of the day or her lesson of the day? Because if you can't say it like it's a headline in a newspaper, like whatever, left hand grip stronger, not aiming right, and turning behind it, like, that's the lesson, right? And I think for me personally, it might be different for you guys, but for me personally, for a long time, and still even like into Atlantic Beach and currently, I almost like try too hard and like inevitably probably end up giving them too much information out of desire for them to get better, but that it's almost like I'm killing the flames, you know? So I think that's why 30, 45, yeah, probably 30 minutes in, I keep asking myself that. So then I know for the second half of the lesson, it's like, I'm just going to hammer home this point. We're going to do it with a couple different clubs. And if we need to talk about scoring or go hit some chips and putts, we can do that, but we don't need to add into that. So.
Yeah, I definitely think for especially for young teachers out there, I think the more you can come up with something that you're gonna rely on is what you're gonna deliver is your pack your lesson theory or whatever you want to call it, to have that solid in your mind and then to be able to get it down on a back of a note card or a business card or in their phones really is how all the kids and stuff are doing it now. But get something that simple, left hand grip stronger, club face square going back, upper body turned behind the ball, over a nice centered foundation. If it can't be that concise and that simple, if it gets beyond that, then I think it's too much. You've kind of gone off the deep end. So you got to get it down simple where they can have a chance of working on one or two things for a couple of weeks and see what kind of progress that builds for them.
Give us one more fad, Jackson. Let's attack it.
One more fad. Oh. I can't. I feel bad.
Shallowing over the shallowing fad.
Oh, the shallowing fad's a good one. Still out there, cuz.
Yeah, I mean, how many great players have you taught that were above the plane?
I mean, a pretty good bit, a pretty good bit. I remember one guy that it was a pretty good player, and I got him a little bit more under the plane, and I think I messed him up more than I helped him at that point. It got going to the right end of the left, and a lot of good people have played a lot of really good golf right on the plane or just a little on top of it. Now, I'm not saying some of the great ball strikers aren't shallow. But I think just trying to paint everybody into a you got to get shallow, you got to get shallow, you got to get shallow. I don't do that ever. And in fact, two words that I try to not ever really use when I'm teaching golf, I think they're destructive words, is steep and shallow. Because what's steep or what's shallow? I mean, let's define, I think you could spend an hour lesson just defining what shallow is or what
Yeah,
shallow
that's
means
great.
to that student. So, just saying steep or just staying shallow, I mean, that I think that confuses people a lot. And I'm not saying that, great players don't come from the inside, come shallow, take thin divots, all that stuff. There's the old saying about Tiger messing with Scottie Scheffler saying when he played great, he didn't take a divot. And they said, "What do you mean you don't take a divot?" We've all laughed and watch that on social media a little bit. So great ball strikers do get shallow. I'm not saying they don't, But trying to make everybody do it the way one guy did it one time for a lot of years is hard to do, especially for handicapped golfers.
Agree. Agree. Jackson, you got anything else?
See, give me one more. Come on, stir the pot for me, please.
I don't know. It's a tough one. I'm trying to think. And I don't know. Well, I know you come up with one.
Well, one that always drove me crazy was when everybody said it doesn't matter how you hold it. I mean, I was just like, I don't know about
Or
that.
how you aim.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think there are fundamentals in everything we do. I mean, there are fundamentals on how to drive a car correctly, and there, there's fundamentals in everything. Fundamentals in cooking, fundamentals in whatever. And, trying to reinvent that and act like those things don't matter, I think that's crazy. And going back to one of the first things I said, if what's so wrong about just putting your hands on there the right way? Well, and then everyone would say, well, what's the right way? Well, I would say the right way is so that your hands and wrists can hinge correctly, and while they're hinging correctly, can they keep the shaft and the face on the plane and square to the plane? And I think if you could get people to do that, I think everybody would get better. So I think there is a right way and a wrong way, and there are things that you can do that'll make things work well, and then you can do things that could make that same thing work very poorly. So, I think those fads of, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just whatever your TrackMan numbers or Foresight numbers or Bushnell numbers say, I just don't know about that. So, I hear what they're saying, but I think, we're charged with growing the game, and we're not growing the game teaching the number five player in the world. We're growing the game, teaching 200 people to keep playing the game year in and year out. That's how you grow the game, and you make them have fun, and you make them buy new clubs, and they want to get new balls to play with instead of balls they find in the lake. And that's how you grow the game. They want to play more golf. They want to
That's
go
why
places.
Titleist pays you all that money,
That's
Wayne.
exactly right. That's exactly right. Get him and buy those new Titleist balls.
I'll end it. I'll say the last bad. Nobody's ever going to convince me, unless the guy's seriously or lady physically deformed, that front post is worth the shit and the way to teach somebody. And I think anybody telling you that's, or that just being super wristy and leaning on your left is the way to go. That's just being lazy and not wanting to coach and actually teach you anything.
I find that I get people doing better when I can get them wound up a little bit more behind it and not leaning into their front leg so much. And now, when you do that, is there a little timing involved and to teach them how to shift back to
Yeah.
center or in front? Absolutely. Shift back into their front post. Absolutely. But again, if we're going to learn, let's learn something new that could and probably will make you better, instead of just trying to learn a better way to do it wrong. And I don't, I hate to say that that's wrong, because there's a million ways to swing a golf ball or swing a golf club, that's for sure. So there are no rights and wrongs, but there are ways to swing a club that maybe are a little easier on your average person physically. Where they won't hurt them, won't hurt their hips or their backs or whatever. And then when you're learning up those ways, then you have to coach them, like you said. Or
I get in there and coach them and teach them something.
yeah, you can't just give a piece of information, watch them hit two balls and walk away and think you've given a lesson. I mean, that's you just can't walk and get lost. You got to stay there with them and let them know you're in the game with them. I think that's a big deal. And I think that's how you build a clientele that continues to come back month after month
No
after month,
question.
year after year after year. And I think when you throw a little piece of information out and you act like you've solved the world problems, then you walk away and nobody sees you again. I think that's what makes it hard to build a clientele for younger teachers. And I think people feel that they're not as important to the teacher at that point, and so they're less apt to want to continue that relationship.
I think I'm going to quote Tom Nest and this on talk about the front post. If that was the way to do it, everybody on that lesson tee would already be a tour player because they all fucking leaned on their front leg.
And they all suck.
And they all suck, right? It's like if that was the way to do it, all those 20 handicappers like this would already be playing the tour. So,
That's right. That's what he
anyways,
said.
guys, thanks for taking time on a Sunday. Appreciate it.
Was a lot of fun, T.
You go see if you can find one of these quarterbacks throwing this Sunday on their front leg at the on the way
Yeah.
back to the yeah. See if that shit works. See, I guarantee you betting on the other team. Shit. That's the truth. All right, you guys have a good one.
Okay, thanks.
Later.